I had mentioned that we would be resuming our discussion of American Muslims and what they say about life in America. We are going to do that. But just before we go there, I would like for us to, well, let's go to technology. How many of you are really into tech? How's your brain handling tech?
Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to Seeker Plus today. I'm Trace. This is part 3 of 3 in our series about internet obsession.
Yeah, that's what we're going to talk about. The internet, its impact on our brains, how well we do or don't handle it. Let's check this out.
Make sure you subscribe for all of the episodes in the series. If you've missed the other one today, they are out with a new episode, all as one audio story, over on SoundCloud, iTunes, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Anchor, you name it. The audio podcast is there. In Act 1 and 2 of this series, we talked about how computer programmers and web developers create products that take advantage of our brain's reward systems. But that isn't actually a new idea. We've been doing this for a long, long time. But today, we're going to talk about if any of this is a bad thing, and what if it's just a better way to experience reality when you're on the internet. And to that end, we're going to dig into the possible technology advancements, problems with tech and development, where we will take our fixation next in the world, and of course, the design of things to come, all thanks to our obsession with the information out there. So let's kick into it. So after learning about all of this stuff over the last two parts, you could probably be pretty confident that technology is reworking how our brains work. It's rewiring them, is what people tend to say. When we have cell phones and computers around, something called cognitive offloading comes into play. So let me give you an example. What is your childhood best friend's phone number? Mine was 555-9379. I know that's a fake phone number, but I'm not going to let you call Pat and Mike. Brian doesn't even live there anymore. I know so many phone numbers because I had to remember them. How many today do kids know? Do you know any phone numbers at all? That's cognitive offloading. How about emails of people that you've met in the last couple of years since you got a cell phone? You probably don't remember any of those. And that's because you keep them in your phone. You offloaded that information out of your brain into something else. There's a study in the journal Memory that looked at this a little more closely. They gave people trivia questions, and then they either allowed them to use Google or didn't to answer the trivia questions. Those who were allowed to use the search engine were reliant on it. They answered that question, and then they were more likely to answer subsequent questions, even if those questions were easier. However, if people didn't use the search engine at all, they were more likely to rely on their own memory at the first question and also think about the second phase of questions before they would reach for their smartphone to try and answer it.
Now, you know what I want to ask you? They're going to use the internet to answer the question, the first question, even if they could possibly answer it on their own. Does that suggest possibly that we're either, you know, wanting to move too fast, and or we have a lot of people really getting lazy about using their brain? I'm just asking now, what do we think? What's going on there? And the folks who decided that they weren't going to use the internet to try to answer the first question, but rather use their brains, also used their brain to answer the second question. And notice what else he said. He said that the folks who used the internet to answer the first question used the internet to answer the second question, despite the fact that the second question was easier. What's going on?
Memory-reliant participants were also quicker at answering trivia questions overall, which means the internet doesn't actually make you faster. It's the other way around. There's a really good write-up on Big Think about this as well. This is changing how our brains interpret the world. For example, if you only lived in a bunker with a small population, you'd not really know what to do if you were dropped in Times Square. And this translates from the digital to the real world in interaction as well. Think about technology and how it's changed how we interact, right? We're connected, but we're not conversing. Some students don't even know how to have a conversation because they've never lived without a cell phone that they can text each other. We're together, but apart is how it's often referred to. Sure, you're on Facebook and you're looking at baby pictures of your friend or your cousin or whatever. And now the baby isn't a baby anymore. It's a small child. And you're like, wow, I've watched it grow up. But have you ever talked to it? Have you ever talked with the person whose baby it is? Have you ever seen it in person? Would the baby know you if you met it?
Now that is a question worth answering. Think back to when I shared with you all a while back, months ago, some of the pushes that people have in play to bring holograms into play in a big way, to the point where, you may recall me talking about this, we can actually have family reunions that are attended in part, or maybe in large part, by people who are not actually there physically, only their holographic figure, the holographic image of them is there. But remember, they're saying that their hope is that they'll get to the point where they can make the hologram so realistic that we can talk with the hologram, we can feel, we'll be able to feel the hologram. You'll be able to hug your great auntie, even though she may not be there. Maybe her great-great-grand-nephew will be able to use his smartphone to get her hologram to show up at the family reunion. And she hang out with you for 30 minutes, 40 minutes, an hour. Although she's not there, she's still at her home 200 miles away. What if people start doing that not only for family reunions, but hey, I just want to hang out for a while, but I don't have time to come, or I really don't have the desire to come. And how involved will the real us have to be in order for the hologram to be doing what the hologram will be doing? How will we connect with each other if the technology is doing a lot of it for us?
Sure, you know its life, you know its personality, but do you really know it? A conversation could change all of that, but we don't have a lot of conversations the way we used to. Plus, we could have a problem with empathy. Empathy is the ability to understand and share feelings of another. It's different from sympathy. Sympathy is more like pity and sorrow. Empathy is I'm in your shoes, right? Rhianne Eisler at the Center for Partnership Studies said that we are restricting empathy only for those who are, quote, like-minded. And that's new. We can train people to be empathetic, but we need to know to try and train them. We need to assume that the reality that we live in now is using phones and the internet all the time. It's the information obsession that we wanted and that we asked for, and now we have it. But it's changing fast, and there are no real answers. But if we pretend like someday we're going to go back to the past, we're never going to do this right. So with that in mind, I say let's choose to embrace it. And moving forward into the future, what can we use this for? We can use it for good. I studied behaviorism when I was in college, so call me a behaviorist if you want, but I think that hyperrealism might be a way to use our information obsession for good. Hyperreality is based on an augmented reality concept. Essentially, we harness the reward systems in our brains that we've been talking about, and also the technology and its ability to use behavioral psychology to make us do things, but we do it for good. So, for example, augmented reality, you've probably seen before. Yelp had this thing called the Monocle for a while. It was really crappy, but it existed. If you have a new iPhone, you can look for an AR app in the App Store. It overlays digital information through the camera. It uses tech inside of your phone to put a digital thing into 3D space. It's actually pretty amazing because right now they come in every single iPhone. And mark my words, Apple did this on purpose. We're going to get a product from them at some point that moves the AR from your cell phone to your face. It's going to happen, but I digress. That's not really what this episode is about. So here's how our addiction to information could be used for good. We love rewards, right? And our love of reward could change the world. It's been a minute, so let me really quickly explain the reward system in the brain. It's what encourages us. We've got dopamine in there. It squirts out, and then we're like, oh, I want to do this some more. Behaviorism are specific targeted behaviors, and we reinforce or punish the actions that mold that behavior. So whether that behavior is keeping you on Facebook or whatever, this is how that works.
All righty. Let's hear some more of that when we get back together in just a few minutes.